assessing the equipment, opening cabinets and drawers. At the far end of the room, metal sliding doors led to a climate-controlled room filled with cold storage units. She pulled one open to find tissue samples and tiny vials of blood, coded and arranged in some kind of sequential pattern. Karan may have given her unfettered access to all the science, but she had no idea what research had already been done, what percentage of the population was impacted by disease, or what current treatments were already in place. She sat back down in front of the screen and began sifting through files. Hours later, her vision swam and her head ached from squinting at figures and formulas. From the information she'd seen so far, she concluded that the impact of the mutations amplified in each successive generation. Drakkaran children born now faced over a 50% chance of carrying the defective genes, and the carriers had a devastating 90% fatality rate before they reached adulthood. Maybe they'll just die out. The thought should have horrified her, and yet, at first, it didn't. If no cure were found, Almagest would be safe. The Alliance would be safe. Entire worlds would be free from the looming shadow of a Drakkaran invasion fleet. She could go home. Then she pictured Navi's sweet face, the fractures in his tiny bones, the tears slipping down his cheeks, and squeezed her eyes shut. She couldn't let that baby die if there was any way to help save him. Swiping at the tears that slid down her own cheeks, she opened another file. For the next several days, Kaylee worked. The Drakkarans kept an enormous database of sequenced DNA from their own population. From it, she definitively traced most of the genetic diseases to the malformed nucleotides carried by the afflicted. She studied the different types of drugs the Drakkarans had already tested and familiarized herself with others that were still in the trial phase. As she scanned through the mind-numbing series of catalogs and lists, a compound name caught her attention, Parahippocampal Stimulus A number 220. This had to be one of the drugs they'd been testing on her. Lena, the scientist she'd accidentally killed, had referenced this region of her brain during the experiment. Kaylee's fingers darted over the keyboard, eyes flowing over the trail of data. Vital signs, dosage amounts, and medical notes, clearly unfinished, filled the screen. The patient, referred to as Beta 1, had to be her. Sweat prickled her forehead as she relived the horror of those moments, the onslaught of unfiltered emotions slamming into her brain, the amplified rage spewing from her own mind into another person's body. She'd killed a woman, not an innocent woman, and not on purpose, but she'd still done it. Her stomach roiled, her breakfast threatening to reappear. She rested her head on the cold desktop, the edges of her vision tunneling to blackness. After the Amathi had invaded her home and massacred most of her people, Kaylee had struggled with panic attacks for years. She recognized the symptoms. Forcing herself to take long, deep breaths and count her own heartbeats, her mind finally quieted. When she could sit up again, her shirt stuck to her body with sweat, and she shivered in the temperate room. But she brushed a damp curl off her face and turned her attention back to the report on the screen. Her thoughts circled as she tried to imagine why Karan would be testing this kind of drug on her. If he thought their shared ancestry held a cure for the disease afflicting his people, why had he experimented with numbing and then amplifying her empathic and telepathic abilities? Her stomach lurched again when she thought about Marcus, the fallen dictator on Almagest, selling gifted Novali children on the black market. Derek and his team believed those children would be used as weapons. They could steal secrets from the minds of military and government officials, be trained as assassins, or any number of other unthinkable things. If the Drakkarans thought using her gifted people might help win their war with the Alliance, Kaylee had no doubt they'd do it. If Karan thought he could use her, she knew he wouldn't hesitate. As she sat in stunned silence, an idea began to take shape. Her hands shook, and she felt ill when she considered it, but her resolve strengthened. She had to escape, whatever it took. Derek, Chapter 8. Once they'd landed and been assigned a dock space, Derek and Kat exited the ship, leaving the rest of the crew behind temporarily. A kiosk directly outside his bay prompted Derek to log in his ship's identification and swipe the key code from his cargo manifest. The port bustled and buzzed like any trading post. Around them, conveyors and carts ferried cargo toward a central facility, and crews from a myriad of worlds accompanied their goods. The atmosphere was one of calm efficiency. Only the armed guards, in full combat gear, prowling around the loading docks, gave Derek pause, hinting that this particular trading post might be filled with less than scrupulous characters. "Let's do this," he said to Kat. Their cases were light and easily slid onto the cart. Once loaded, Derek and Kat followed the rest of the crowd into the expansive main warehouse. They found an open receiving gate easily and approached the agent. "He's Mirren," Kat whispered to Derek, who nodded his agreement. "Ship identifier and manifest, please," the gate agent requested. Worry lines creased his brow, and bluish circles rimmed his eyes. He looked overworked and underfed, his shirt hanging from his bony shoulders. Derek gave him his tablet to scan. "Please confirm your ship is designated the Kairos," the agent asked perfunctorily. "It is," Derek answered. "I am taking delivery of therapeutic pharmaceuticals. They will be inspected and catalogued by the ranking medical officer. When it is confirmed that this merchandise matches the cargo manifest you've submitted, an automatic deposit will be made to the account you've indicated here. Once payment has been rendered, you will have 24 hours to depart Drokhar Protectorate airspace. Otherwise, your ship will be confiscated. I need confirmation that you understand these terms." The instructions were delivered in a monotone, while the Mirren scanned the containers, entering data into a tablet. 24 hours and your ship will be confiscated. How very Drakkarin," Kat mumbled under her breath. Clearing his throat, Derek agreed to the terms. "Where can my crew rent rooms and get some food?" he asked. The agent squinted up at Derek. "First time here." "First time in a long time," he said, holding the Mirren's eyes. "Any help would be appreciated." The man gave a small, knowing nod. "You're in the Arad district. You'll find lodging on the south side. Take the underground to Kluj and get off there." "Thanks," Derek said, giving the agent a quick wave. He and Kat walked back toward the ship, surveying the controlled chaos around them. "Let's get the team and head out," he said. "I don't know how long before the payment's transferred, but we've got a tight timeline to gather intel," Derek said. His team sat around a table in a quiet corner of a small tavern, eating and planning. They'd had an uneventful ride on the underground from the docking port to the Kluj district, and easily found lodging in a newly reconstructed building. Derek had surreptitiously watched Drew during the brief walk from the underground. If the younger man was feeling anything about being back on his war-torn home world, he was hiding it well. "There's a few hours of daylight left," he continued. "So, let's split up. Talk to the locals. See if we can learn anything useful." He turned to Drew. "I know this isn't where you grew up, but have you ever been to Arad before?" Drew nodded. "Arad was a commercial center, and the neighboring areas supported visitors and tourism. It's probably why the Drakkarins chose to make it the trade port. The infrastructure was already in place. What they didn't destroy, they could repurpose and rebuild. I'll see if anything I remember is still standing. Or anyone," he added, staring down at his plate. "Take Kat with you. Sean, you're with me. Alaric, stay with Cade. Make sure you're all back here by curfew," Derek said. He paid the tab and left the tavern with Sean at his heels. In the afternoon sunshine, the tight row of buildings cast long shadows onto the street. This region of Mira was temperate nearly all year long, and Derek only needed a light jacket to feel comfortable. As they wandered the neighborhood, crumbling structures stood as stark reminders of the war that had altered this planet's destiny. Construction projects, scattered about in various phases of completion, would eventually erase the physical damage, but the damage to the human psyche would take longer. There was a palpable tension in the air that Derek could feel, but not quantify. "Not many Drakkarins around," Sean observed. "Almost feels like business as usual, but not quite," replied Derek.
I guess a hostile occupation force will keep a damper on things.
At the end of the block, a large outdoor park met the edge of a riverbank. Across the river, the residential feel of the neighborhood gave way to industrial sprawl. Even from this side of the river, Derek recognized a Drakkaran military base tucked among the factories and access roads.
"There they are, at least some of them," Derek said, leaning against the railing at the river's edge.
Shielding his eyes from sun glare, Sean nodded.
"I'd like to get a closer look at that."
Derek was about to answer when one of the hangars on the opposite side of the riverbank erupted into flame. The explosion shook the ground beneath them and sent a plume of black smoke billowing into the sky.
"Shit," Derek said, instinctively raising his hands to shield his head. "I think that was a bomb," Sean said, eyes narrowing as he watched the smoke rise.
People ran from the park to the edge of the river, crowding the rails next to Derek and Sean. Alarms blared from the base, and within moments, three small aerial craft lifted off and circled the area from above.
"Surveillance," Derek said, watching them.
A young mother peeled a squirming child off the fence.
"You'll fall into the water," she scolded, trying to juggle another toddler on her hip.
The young boy climbed again, this time looping a leg over the top rail. Derek caught him by the scruff of his collar just before he careened over the side. On solid ground again, the boy grabbed onto his mother's leg and looked wide-eyed at Derek.
"Thank you," the mother said,
sighing and shaking her head.
"No problem," Derek answered. "I have nephews."
He turned back to the activity across the water and asked,
"This kind of thing happen a lot?"
The woman gave him a sideways glance.
"Not from here."
He gave a noncommittal shrug.
"It's happening regularly now," she answered. "I suppose this could be an accident, but it's probably the MLA. We'd better get off the streets. The Drax will be out in force. Thank you again," she added as she walked away, shifting the baby to the other hip and pulling her son along behind her.
Sean looked at Derek and raised his eyebrows.
"Interesting."
"Very,"
Derek agreed. They stood watching for another few minutes. As the crowd cleared away from the bridge, so did they. Shadowing a small group of locals, they headed away from the park, down an alley, and into a bar. Dive bars were pretty much the same on any planet, Derek thought, as the sour smell of spilled booze and sweaty bodies assaulted him. The place buzzed. He and Sean found empty seats at the end of the counter, where they could see and hear a good bit of the surrounding conversation. They ordered drinks. A few seats down, a quiet argument became loud enough for Derek to take notice.
"That was a joint base. The bomb probably killed as many Mirans as Drax," the man closest to Derek said,
shaking his head and taking a long swig from his cup.
"Good. Fuck those collaborators. The MLA's taking a stand,"
a younger, angrier voice argued. This man raised his glass, receiving cheers all around, except from the person who'd spoken first. He put his head down and kept drinking.
"They're only gonna make it worse for everyone else," he muttered under his breath, so that Derek could barely make out his words.
Before the energy in the room turned violent, the bartender banged a bottle on the counter.
"Shut up or get out," she yelled over the noise.
Her sharp reprimand quieted the crowd. Most patrons went back to their private conversations, and Derek motioned for a refill. When the bartender leaned over to pour, he asked quietly,
"What's the MLA?"
Narrowing her eyes at him, the woman stopped pouring midway.
"This place is for locals only."
Derek held his hands up in a position of surrender.
"Sorry, we're just trying to get off the streets and stay out of the way."
Behind them on the screens hung over the bar. A message from the Drakkaran authorities played repeatedly, advising citizens to comply with Drakkaran interrogators and come forward with any useful information on the destructive incident that had killed both Mirran citizens and Drakkaran troops. The bartender's expression didn't soften, but she topped off his drink and left him alone. In that moment, Derek wished he had Kaylee's empathic skill. Even without invading this woman's mind, Kaylee would still have been able to get a clear read on her. Once he started thinking about Kaylee, the ache of missing her slammed into his gut. He stared down at his glass,
swirling the amber liquid. Sean's quiet voice spoke.
"You okay?"
Derek opened his mouth to answer, then clamped it shut again. He wasn't okay, and he knew it, but he had to keep his shit together.
"She could be here somewhere," he said, still staring into his drink.
Kaylee, Chapter 9. Kaylee had filled the vial with only a quarter of the dose Lina had previously injected her with. Still, she hesitated as she held the pneumatic syringe against her carotid. Taking a deep breath, she depressed the plunger. A quick, hot sting followed, then a warm tingle as the drug spread through her body. Slowly, like the volume of a radio being dialed up, the noise in her mind increased. She focused her attention on the area immediately surrounding the lab. The inner thoughts of Drakkaran security personnel, researchers, and staff tickled in the background. Sifting through them, she focused on one Drakkaran, just to see if she could. The clarity of his thought was like a voice speaking in her ear. Quickly, she let go of the connection, sat in her chair, and opened a file. A spinning model of a damaged chromosome materialized on the workspace in front of her. Two guards stood posted outside the door. Their thoughts rang through Kaylee's brain, her head pounding. Focusing her attention, she visualized an explosion here in the lab, and then flung the image from her mind to theirs. Within seconds, they burst through the door. Kaylee jumped out of her chair, feigning surprise, but not fear. "What's wrong?" she asked, her eyes on their drawn weapons. The first guard scanned the room.
"Was there an accident?"
"In here? No. I'm working on the molecular modeling for nucleotide sequence 234A. He interrupted her.
"It sounded like an explosion."
"No, of course not. There aren't any flammable materials around. At least I don't think there are," she added. His cold stare froze her in place.
"There was an explosion," he said, taking a step toward her.
"No," she protested. She could feel his growing suspicion. He knew what he'd heard, and he knew his companion had heard it too.
"There's nothing here. Maybe it came from somewhere else," Kaylee whispered directly into his mind.
Her thoughts brushed against his so gently that he believed the idea to be his own. His expression softened, and he looked around the room again.
"I don't see anything," he said to the other guard.
Then he turned to Kaylee.
"Let me know if you have a problem."
"I will, thank you," she said, as they left her to her work. A quarter dose of the neurostimulant seemed to be the sweet spot for efficacy, without loss of control. Kaylee didn't dare record the results of her personal experiments, but she committed everything to memory. Sinking back into the chair, she rubbed her temples. Excess noise still hummed in her brain, grating against her already frayed nerves, but she could tolerate it. When Karan came for her that night, two armed guards followed him into the room. Kaylee stood wide-eyed as he strode toward her.
"There was an incident today."
Shaking her head, she backed away from him.
"An alarm went off, but it wasn't in here. The guards came to check. Everything was fine."
He stood in absolute stillness, his eyes boring into hers. She resisted the urge to nudge his thoughts with hers and force him to believe her words, afraid he might sense even the smallest encroachment into his mind.
"Bring her," he ordered.
The guards trained their weapons on her and motioned for her to move. Her mouth went dry when they stopped at the entrance to the medical lab.
"No, please, no!"
She staggered backward, only to feel a gun pressed between her shoulder blades. When the door slid open, the guards shoved her through. Karan gripped her by the throat and pushed her onto the metal table. One of the guards secured her wrists and ankles. Without a word, they left. When the door slid closed and locked, the room plunged into absolute darkness. Kaylee didn't know if she screamed out loud or only in her mind, if her eyes were open or closed, if she was in the throes of a nightmare, or wide awake. Eventually,
Her bladder let go. The warm wetness turned cold, and then dried. Her stomach ached with hunger. Her lips dried and cracked, and her tongue stuck to the roof of her mouth. She dreamed of Derek, of his crash. Instead of pulling him from the wreckage and saving him, she found herself trapped on the other side of a river. When she tried to cross, the current dragged her farther and farther away from him. When the door to the lab finally opened again, the light blinded Kaylee. Rough hands loosened her restraints and pulled her from the table. Her legs collapsed, and someone gripped her under the armpits, hauling her to her feet. She blinked. It was Karan, dragging her from the room out to his waiting vehicle. Once inside, she leaned against the side door, letting her head rest on the cool metal as they sped away from the facility. When they arrived at Karan's home, he led her inside. She swayed as the world spun around her. When Marta caught sight of Kaylee, hovering in the doorway, she rushed to her side. "Kaylee, are you all right?" Kaylee didn't answer, but she allowed Marta to help her inside, leaning on the older woman so she wouldn't stumble. Karan left without speaking to either of them. "Come with me," Marta said, leading Kaylee to the bathroom. The other woman ran a bath and helped Kaylee strip off her soiled clothes. "What can I do?" she asked. Kaylee eased her aching body into the warm water, her bottom lip trembling.
"Water, please."
Marta nodded. She returned moments later with a cup. Kaylee's entire body shook. She had to hold the cup with both hands to keep it from dropping into the bath. Marta knelt on the floor and smoothed Kaylee's hair back from her forehead.
"Marta," she said, choking back a sob, "I have to find a way out of here. I have to go home."
She knew her voice sounded pleading, desperate.
"He hurt you."
The older woman's eyes locked onto Kaylee's wrists, rubbed raw and bruised from trying to escape her restraints. Kaylee's chest heaved.
"I want to help," Marta whispered.
For the rest of the day, Marta took care of Kaylee. She tucked her onto the couch under layers of blankets and fed her bowls of soup and warm tea. Kaylee dozed while Navi played quietly on the floor nearby. Karan didn't appear until the next morning, when he collected Kaylee and brought her back to the research lab. For the next several days, two armed guards remained inside with her, watching her every move.
"If you can get away, I might know someone who could hide you," Marta whispered, leaning over the table as she and Kaylee shared breakfast.
Karan had gone, leaving them alone in the house to watch over Navi. Kaylee had spent the previous night repairing another of the little boy's broken bones. Kaylee stilled and held Marta's gaze.
"Who?" "There's a former student of mine named Luca, who had some difficulties as a boy. I advocated on his behalf for many years, and he grew into a very decent young man. He survived the war and took it upon himself to check in on me afterward. I still maintain contact with him. I think he would help you if I asked him to." "Will that put you in danger?" Kaylee asked, her forehead furrowed.
She held her steaming mug of tea in her hands and blew on the contents. Marta shook her head.
"I don't think so. I see Luca when I go shopping in town with Navi. The guards are with us, but they don't pay close attention to me after all this time. Let me speak to him."
"Thank you,"
Kaylee said, covering the other woman's hand with her own. The next day, as she prepared to leave the lab for the evening, Kaylee tidied her workspace. The guards had become used to her routine. While she replaced tissue cultures and slides into the cold storage unit, they stood waiting by the exit door. Out of their line of sight, Kaylee carefully slipped three vials of neurostimulant into her pocket. A few days later, over another cup of tea, Marta told Kaylee that she'd contacted Luca.
"If you can get to him, he will help you," Marta said.
Kaylee blinked, her pulse suddenly racing.
"How do I find him?"
Get to the underground system before curfew. Stop at Solivat. Head toward the center of town, where you'll see a large obelisk tower. It was built when this colony was founded. Somehow it's still standing. Luca will wait there every night for the next week, half an hour before curfew. Will you be able to get away by then? Kaylee's heart pounded in her chest. The idea of running terrified her, but she had to escape. If there were someone willing to help her, she had to at least try. She took slow, steady breaths until she could speak again. Yes. I've told him what you look like, so he will approach you by name. Will you be okay?
Marta placed a reassuring hand on her shoulder.
Don't worry about me.
That night, Kaylee lay awake, staring up at the ceiling. Alone in the dark, she allowed herself to think about Derek, to imagine him beside her, to feel his breath on her cheek while he slept. Marta and Kaylee didn't speak about escape, curfews, or clandestine meetings again, but on a night when Karan left the house after dropping her off, Kaylee waited until Marta went to bed. She stuffed the few articles of clothing Marta had procured for her into a backpack, carefully wrapping the extra drug vials in a shirt before tucking them inside. Sitting on the edge of the bed, she rolled one vial back and forth in her sweating palm. Her stomach churned. Around her, the house was silent. Finally, she injected herself with a quarter dose of the stinging liquid. When she felt it rush through her body, she stood and tiptoed through the dark house to the rear door. The security panel blinked a muted red, indicating it was armed. Her biometrics wouldn't disable it, and she didn't know the override code. Reaching out with her mind, she located the nearest security guard. She imagined a crashing sound and directed the noise into his brain. Within seconds, the security panel chirped quietly and flashed green. The door swung open, and Kaylee found herself face to face with a Drakkaran soldier in full tactical gear. Before he could utter a word, she used her mind to compress the vessels leading to his brain, choking off the blood flow. He grabbed at his throat and promptly passed out, collapsing in a heap on the ground. Kaylee hurried to him and dragged his heavy body out the door by his feet, the door clicking closed behind them. She could hear others approaching, feel the hum of their minds vibrating against hers. Stepping over the body, she released her mental grip on his carotid and ran through the yard. With the enhanced strength of her gift, she hid herself from the soldiers who were fast approaching their fallen companion, imagining herself as only a wisp of darkness in the already murky night. They passed her, and she slipped unnoticed into the street. Marta had given her detailed instructions on how to get to the nearest subway entrance. Mira's infrastructure included a vast network of underground tunnels. Before the war, they'd been used mostly for cargo transport, but when huge chunks of the above-ground, multi-leveled highway system had been damaged during the invasion, the trains became the primary form of transportation for the majority of the population. The Drakkarans, according to Marta, repaired the highway routes that served their needs, prohibiting most other traffic. The civilian population used the subway. A brisk night breeze sent a chill up Kaylee's spine. Her feet falling lightly on the empty streets, she ran until her chest ached and her lungs heaved. She skidded to a stop when she came upon the entryway for the underground. Turning the corner, she pressed herself up against the building, away from the mass of people still coming and going before curfew, and tucked her blonde curls under a light hat. Shifting the backpack to her other shoulder, she released the shadow image held in her mind and stepped into the crowd.
Derek, Chapter 10. "I've just received the confirmation code. We've got to get our ship off this planet in 24 hours, Derek said.
The team sat crammed into the small, rented quarters an hour after curfew. Everyone had returned before the Drakkaran aerial drones began their nightly patrol of the streets.
"We can't leave," Drew said.
"No, we can't," Derek agreed. "Alaric and Cade, you're going to take the Kairos off-planet and rendezvous with Horizon. Sean, Kat, and I will stay. We'll make contact when we find Kaylee.
Got it, Alaric said.
What's our plan? Drew asked.
Glancing at Sean, Derek said, I want to try to track down the MLA.
They're the ones who blew up the military base, right? The Mirren Liberation Army?
Kat asked.
I think so, Derek answered. From what I heard, they're aggressively attacking Drakkarans every chance they get. They must be collecting intel. If we can hook up with them, maybe they can help us find Kaylee.
Kat crossed her arms and nodded.
They must be pretty well organized at this point to go after a military base.
At the very least, we know they have explosives. Maybe weapons, too, Drew said.
Leaning forward, Derek asked, Did you make any useful contacts?
I may have, Drew replied.
Kat and I went back to the port. Kairos is docked at the interplanetary port, but there's a local transit authority that deals with continent-to-continent trade and travel.
It isn't as well regulated as the off-world section. I got the impression there's an underground network that operates outside Drakkaran authority.
Derek raised an eyebrow.
They might have access to the MLA.
They might be supplying the MLA, Drew said. Leaning back in his chair, Derek rubbed his hands over his face. He trusted Drew's gut, and following up with this lead seemed like a solid option.
This is a good start. There's nothing more we can do tonight, and we all need to sleep. Tomorrow, we'll get Kairos out of here and keep digging.
In the stillness of night, Derek stared up at the ceiling, remembering the last time he'd been on Mira. The Drakkarans had blockaded the planet with their battlecruisers, and their ground assault had overrun both continents. If the Alliance had continued to fight, the planet's population would have been annihilated. Derek and his team had spent the final days of the war making last-ditch efforts to evacuate civilians. Their small shuttlecrafts could maneuver between Drakkaran patrols and evade detection, until they couldn't anymore. Eventually, the Drakkarans knew where to look for them.
He squeezed his eyes shut, trying and failing to shut out the memories.
The next morning, when Alaric and Cade lifted off on the Kairos, Derek was apprehensive. He hoped the two wouldn't run into any trouble on their way out of the system. As he looked around at Kat, Sean, and Drew, it hit him fully that they were now trapped on Mira with no leads on Kaylee and no real plan to get themselves off-planet. Derek stared at Kairos until the ship disappeared into the clouds. Kat put a hand on his shoulder.
"We've been in worse shit," she said.
"Yeah," Derek agreed.
It was true. Even when a mission started out solid, Derek could always count on something going sideways. Part of what made his team so effective in the field was their ability to adapt, to think on their feet. Still, as far as mission plans went, this one felt pretty thin. It took Drew 3 days before he was able to arrange for them to meet someone who might be willing to talk to them.
"My contact is skittish," he warned the team as they sat around a table in their rented room.
Derek shrugged. "I would be, too. You've essentially been off-world for over a decade, and we're a complete unknown. Mercenaries don't usually hide out on occupied planets. Our cover is thin, and they can sense it."
"How do you want to play this?" Drew asked.
"Let's stick to the story that we're looking for intel on our crewmate who was taken into Drakkaran custody," Derek answered. He sat back in his chair and looked around at the small group.
"Drew and I will go to the meeting. If they don't believe us and feel threatened, I don't want all four of us jammed up."
He could tell by Kat's scowl that she didn't like being left behind, but she nodded.
"Makes sense."
They'd managed to smuggle some communication equipment off the Kairos before the ship left port and had hidden it among Derek's personal effects. Crammed into his small quarters, they each placed a tiny device next to their ears. As soon as the thin adhesive stuck to their temples, it changed color, blending seamlessly with their varied skin tones.
"Stay close, but don't compromise yourselves," Derek warned.
He and Sean wandered out ahead of Kat and Drew to give them a few moments of privacy.
"If we find them, I'll probably have to tell the MLA the truth about us eventually," he said,
mostly thinking out loud, but also wanting Sean's gut reaction to the idea. They might not have a very high opinion of the Alliance, replied the other man.
Can't say I blame them.
Exhaling slowly, Sean said, Telling them might be our only option, though. If she's here, Kaylee would be considered a high-value prisoner, not just some mercenary who got herself into trouble over a transaction gone wrong. They'll probably need that information in order to help us find her.
I hope they're willing to help, said Derek. Otherwise, I'm out of ideas.
Drew and Kat emerged from the doorway and joined Derek and Sean on the crumbling sidewalk. Kat shaded her eyes against the bright morning sunlight.
Good luck. We'll be listening, she said, squinting at Derek and tapping her comm.
He and Drew headed toward the subway entrance without looking over their shoulders. When they emerged at the transportation center, Derek followed Drew through the busy market toward the waterfront.
My contact runs a high-speed ferry service up and down the river. I know he can get us to people higher up in the MLA. We just have to convince him to do it, Drew said. And not get caught by the Drakkarans, Derek added. That too.
They found the man they were looking for in a messy office, piles of schedules and cargo manifests littering his desk. More were pinned to the walls. The remnants of breakfast sat abandoned, pushed to one corner of a table. When they entered, the man looked up. At first, his face wrinkled with annoyance at being disturbed, but recognition followed. Then, a sigh of resignation.
I was hoping not to see you again, he said to Drew.
Drew shrugged.
We need help.
Who's this? The man asked, jutting his chin at Derek.
My boss, Drew answered.
And what happened to your girlfriend?
Drew shrugged again, noncommittally.
Sit.
My name's Keegan,
the man said, addressing Derek and motioning to a couple of mismatched chairs shoved under the table.
Sorry for the mess. The communication and wireless infrastructure were destroyed during the war. We have to keep track of everything the old way.
Derek and Drew dragged two chairs over and sat.
Simple to keep a separate set of logs, unhackable records, easy to forge or destroy, Derek commented, gesturing at the piles.
Keegan lifted an eyebrow.
I'm Derek. My crew and I just started making deliveries to Mira from the Baishan system. There was a misunderstanding, and one of my people was taken into custody by the Drakkarans.
Tapping his fleshy, calloused fingers on the desktop, Keegan leaned forward in his chair, his dark eyes boring into Derek's.
Let me be clear. The only reason I am speaking to you at all is that your friend was born here, and he convinced me you aren't Drakkaran agents. But I won't put any of our people at risk.
Derek held the older man's gaze for several heartbeats. He could feel Drew tense beside him.
I promise you, we have no love for the Drakkarans. We need to find out where they hold prisoners.
Keegan sat back, squinting at Derek. Finally, he nodded.
I can put you in touch with someone. Thank you, Derek said.
Don't thank me. They might just as easily shoot you as listen to you.
Kaylee, Chapter 11.
Kaylee didn't make eye contact with anyone. Holding a handrail, she focused on keeping her balance as the train accelerated. The humming thoughts of the other passengers battered against her overactive brain. She felt her pulse quicken in response to someone else's anxiety, her stomach churn with someone else's dread, her limbs weaken with someone else's exhaustion. It would wear off soon. She'd have control of her own mind. Turning her focus inward, she counted one breath at a time, and waited for the train to stop. Following the rush of bodies out and up, she stepped back into the night. Once the crowd cleared, she turned in a circle, searching her surroundings. There it was, a few blocks in the distance, the towering obelisk, with rotating lights at the top, calling attention to itself. A beacon, or a warning. She approached the monument and purposefully stretched her mind out. There was someone nearby, a figure in the shadows.
Luca,
Kaylee sent the question from her mind to his.
Kaylee,
the figure stepped toward her.
Yes, she answered, relief flowing through her body like a warm wave.
Follow me,
he said. They wound through deserted alleyways, emerging into a cluster of residential homes. Luca led her through backyards overgrown with bushes and grass. Even in the dark, the neighborhood had an abandoned, unkempt feel to it. They stopped at a house with dim light escaping its shuttered windows, and Luca tapped softly before opening the door and ushering Kaylee inside. An older woman looked up from the table, startled. Dark, greasy hair hung to her shoulders, and her skin glowed with an unhealthy, yellowish undertone.
"My friend is staying here tonight," Luca told her.
"You're gonna get us in trouble bringing home every stray you find," the woman complained.
Kaylee caught the slight slurring of her words.
"Leave it alone, Mom,"
Luca answered, gesturing for Kaylee to follow.
"Don't worry about her. She'll pass out and forget you were ever here."
He pointed to a small bedroom. "You can sleep there."
"Thank you, Luca."
"Are you hungry? I can probably find something for you to eat."
"No, I'm all right."
Her stomach still hadn't settled from the night's activities. She sat on the edge of the bed and let her pack fall to the floor at her feet. Luca leaned in the doorway, stuffing his hands in his pockets. He bore a slight resemblance to the woman in the kitchen with his dark hair, piercing brown eyes, and the angular shape of his cheekbones, but the similarity ended there. Thin as he was, his skin was clear, and his expression alert.
"I appreciate your help," Kaylee said.
"You can't stay here long. If you're in trouble, which I guess you must be, I know people who can hide you. I'll get you to them tomorrow." Kaylee could feel his curiosity, but also the self-protective instinct warning him not to ask.
"I appreciate that very much."
"Let me know if you need anything. Washroom is just there on the left, and I'm right down the hall," he said, backing into the hallway and pulling the door closed behind him. Kaylee exhaled and lay back on the bed. As the adrenaline and drugs wore off, she could feel her body crashing. Her eyelids fluttered closed, and she gave in to the darkness. She woke to kitchen sounds, clanking pans, sliding drawers, cupboards opening and shutting, and the smell of toasted bread. Although the window was shuttered, warm morning light made its way into the room, flecks of dust floating in the narrow streams. Venturing out, Kaylee found Luca moving efficiently around in the small space. When she rounded the corner, he gave her a cautious smile and said,
"You must be hungry by now."
At that, her stomach growled noisily, and they both laughed.
"Can I do anything to help?" Kaylee asked.
"I've got it under control," he said, placing a jar of jam on the table. There was no sign of Luca's mother. Kaylee could feel another presence in the house, but she suspected the woman was asleep.
"Marta speaks very highly of you," she said.
"She was a great teacher and a really good person. I owe her a lot," Luca admitted, taking a seat across from Kaylee.
"Thank you again for helping me. I hope I'm not putting you and your family at risk."
"No more than usual," he assured her between mouthfuls.
"This world has been occupied for a while. It must be hard," she said, wanting information, but not wanting to pry or make Luca uncomfortable. He seemed nonplussed.
"Some people adapt. Some never will. The Drax invaded my home, bombed my neighbors. I was only a kid when it happened, but my choice has always been clear to me," he said, matter of fact.
"My world was at war not so long ago. One side didn't think the other had a right to exist. We fought, and we won, but it cost us a lot," she said quietly.
He held her gaze.
"We understand each other then. I think we do."
They finished their breakfast in companionable silence. Kaylee helped tidy the kitchen, watching as Luca carefully put aside a plate for his mother. Her heart broke a little for him. He was still so young, too young for the wariness in his eyes. When they left the house, Kaylee tucked her hair under her hat again. In the bright morning sun, she got a better look at the neighborhood. Debris, partially covered with weeds and dirt, littered the abandoned yards. Several homes had been reduced to rubble and never rebuilt.
nature continued its relentless encroachment, vines and moss pulling the remnants back into the earth.
The bombs missed my house, but they weren't so lucky, Luca said, following Kaylee's gaze.
As she stood staring, the memory of her own home, reduced to ashes, slammed into her brain.
Are you okay?
Luca's soft, concerned voice pulled her back to the present. She blinked and shook her head, willing the images to disappear.
I'm sorry.
Luca shrugged and quickened his pace, Kaylee trotting after him. They hurried through the neighborhood, back behind alleyways, and into a part of the city that hadn't been rebuilt.
Aren't you afraid the whole thing will come down on top of you?
Kaylee asked as Luca led her into a building with half the roof missing.
It's safe enough. We've done a little work on the interior, he answered.
What was this? Before?
An industrial complex, Luca answered. I think too much was destroyed for it to be worth rebuilding. Because of that, the Drax don't come around here much, which is good for us. Kaylee was about to ask who he meant by us when they came to a heavy steel door. Luca knocked, his fists beating out a particular rhythm. In seconds, the door slid open. Two heavily armed guards ushered them inside and slammed the door shut behind them.
"Who's this?"
one asked, interested but not overly concerned.
"A runner," Luca answered.
The guard nodded and waved them on. As they wound through dimly lit corridors, the sound of voices grew louder. The corridor emptied into a large space that looked like it had once been a warehouse. Now it resembled a camp. Small areas were partitioned off for privacy and sleeping. A common cooking space buzzed with activity. Drying clothes hung from makeshift lines, and supplies lined shelves and formed neat stacks around the perimeter. The sounds and smells of humanity, living in close quarters, assaulted Kaylee's senses. The collective hum of their minds against hers felt oddly comforting. There was little fear among them. Kaylee mostly sensed purpose and determination, with an undercurrent of impatience. It felt like they were preparing for something. A few people looked at her curiously as Luca led her further inside, but most were occupied and paid no attention. At the far side of the compound, Luca knocked on another door. This time a voice answered,
"Come in!"
Luca pushed the door open and ushered Kaylee inside. The room looked like a command center with charts and maps pinned to the walls, equipment piled on tables and in corners, and weapons leaning against walls. A tall, solidly built man looked up from a screen. He stood when she entered, his piercing, dark eyes holding her gaze.
"Ezra, this is Kaylee. She needs help," Luca said.
"Kaylee, welcome."
Ezra extended his hand. Kaylee took it, her skin pale against his, and her hand tiny in his large grasp.
"I'll leave you to talk." Luca closed the door behind himself.
"Please, have a seat," Ezra said, his voice deep and soothing. "People often find their way to us when they're in trouble."
He opened his arms, inviting Kaylee to speak. She let out a breath and sank down into a chair across from him.
"Thank you."
Reaching out with her mind, she brushed against his, not to steal his thoughts, only to confirm her initial impression that she was safe here. She felt honesty in his intent, but still she hesitated, fearing what he might do if he knew the whole truth.
"I escaped from the Drakarans. It took me a long time, but a friend of Luca's helped me," she offered.
"Marta, the boy speaks highly of his former teacher.
She's become a friend to me as well."
Ezra squinted at her.
"Who are you, Kaylee?"
His tone was non-threatening, but it was clear he wanted more information. She opened her mouth to speak and then shut it again, a lump forming in her throat. Taking a deep breath, she tried again.
"I'm not from Mira," she began.
Ezra lifted his eyebrows and leaned back in his chair.
"My homeworld was recently at war, too, but in our case, one civilization tried to destroy the other. I was part of a resistance movement. We won. Once our government stabilized, we petitioned the Interplanetary Alliance for membership. I was on my way to formally accept our full member status when the Drakarans attacked my ship, killed my crew and brought me here.
You're a diplomat, then.
Kaylee smiled at that.
A doctor, actually, but we do what we have to.
Ezra smiled back.
Indeed we do. War is an ugly, ugly thing.
He stood and poured her a glass of water. She took the cup with shaking hands, and he waited for her to continue.
They're sick. The Drakkarans, Kaylee said.
We know. When they established control of the planet, one of the first things they did was take blood and tissue samples from a large portion of the population. They experimented on us.
They experimented on me too, Ezra.
She wasn't willing to tell him anything more, but as much as she kept hidden, real fear and desperation filled her voice.
Is there some way off this planet? She asked.
Ezra shook his head.
We haven't found one yet. After the war, the Drakkarans kept Mira isolated. No off-world contact. They've recently opened us up to limited, highly regulated trade with unaffiliated organizations. My group has tried to make some initial connections outside Drakkaran authority, but the people we're dealing with are questionable characters at best. They have no interest in jeopardizing their business without serious incentive, and they certainly aren't interested in our cause.
Eyes widening, Kaylee tapped her fingers lightly against the cup in her hand.
Off-world trade.
The people involved were mercenaries, or worse, but they had ships that regularly left Mira.
It's a possibility, but these people are dangerous, Ezra cautioned,
reading Kaylee's hopeful expression correctly. Nodding, she put her cup down, shut her eyes, and rubbed her temples. When she looked up again, Ezra gave her a gentle smile.
You're welcome to stay with us. We could certainly use another doctor, and all intel filters through here, so if anything does sound promising, I'll let you know.
Thank you, Ezra. You have no idea how much this means to me.
Her voice hitched when she spoke. She could rest here, recover, and try to come up with a plan.
Derek, Chapter 12.
Derek leaned his head against the damp cement wall, grateful that so far the interrogations had been half-hearted at best. His body ached, mostly from sleeping on the hard floor. When Drew and Derek had met Keegan's contact a few days ago, they were greeted with open suspicion, blindfolded, and dragged off. Derek knew his captors wanted to keep their location hidden, and they'd done a good job disorienting him. They'd also separated him from Drew, but he wasn't all that worried yet. He'd kept to the story that the Drakkarans had detained one of his crewmates, and he and Drew had stayed behind to figure things out. He'd communicated once with Kat when he was sure he was alone in the locked cell, convincing her to lie low with Sean and not to come looking for them. The lack of action went against both their natures, but he wanted to align himself with this group, and having Kat and Sean try to break them out of a hidden MLA safe house wouldn't help his cause. When the door to the cell opened, Derek pulled himself to his feet.
Move!
An armed guard motioned at him with a gun, cuffed his hands behind his back, and marched him down the hallway. He shoved Derek into what looked like a supply closet turned interrogation room, forced him into a chair, and left. A few moments later, a woman entered, flanked by two armed Mirans. Derek recognized her immediately. She squinted at him.
"You're the off-worlder from the bar," she said.
He didn't respond. She stepped closer.
"Who are you?"
"My crew and I were doing a little business here, and one of us was detained. I heard you might be able to help." Even as he said it, he knew she didn't believe him.
"You're trying to infiltrate my group," she hissed.
"I'm just trying to help my friend."
"You found me in that bar, and now you've managed to track me down here. Are you collaborating with the Drax?" she asked.
"No, I had no idea who you were in the bar," he answered truthfully.
She looked at the man to her left. In one quick motion, he hit Derek in the face with the butt of his gun. Derek knew his nose was broken from the sickening crack that rang in his ears and the warm, wet gush of blood splashing onto his shirt. It took a few seconds for the pain to register. The woman squatted down, her face only a few inches from him.
"Let's try again. What are you doing here?"
He choked on his own salty blood. When he could finally speak, his voice carried all the pent-up rage and desperation he'd been holding in check.
"The Drakkarans took someone I love, and I will tear this fucking planet apart to get her back."
She sat back on her heels.
"Now that I believe."
He closed his eyes and let his head hang.
"What information can you give me?" she asked. "She's an off-worlder too. A doctor. Her ship was attacked by the Drakkarans, and I believe they brought her to Mira. I'll make inquiries. If I find out you've done anything to put my people in danger, or that you are collaborating with the Drax in any way," she said, pointing an accusatory finger, "I will kill you."
He didn't doubt her. She stood and brushed off her pants.
"I don't have time to continue our conversation right now, but you will tell me the rest of your story. I'll get it from you, or I'll get it from your friend. Lock him back up."
One of the men hauled him to his feet, and he stumbled back to his cell. Cat's tense voice echoed in his ear.
"That's it. We're coming to get you." "No, we're okay,"
Derek answered back, slouched in the corner of the dark, empty cell. In truth, he was miserable. His face hurt, his chest ached from breathing in the persistent dampness, and his shirt was plastered to his body with dried sweat and crusted blood. He tried to keep the discomfort out of his voice, but Cat wasn't fooled.
"You don't sound okay," she said. "I find it relaxing in here." "Thanks for asking," Drew said. "Damn it, Drew. You know I want you guys out of there. It's been 2 days since you've seen that bitch of a bartender. We'll go back to the bar. Follow her," Cat said.
Derek imagined her pacing, her face tight with a scowl he knew so well.
"We have to give it a little more time," he insisted.
"We have no idea what their network is like or how fast they can gather intel."
"But we don't even know if she's really following up. She thinks you're a potential threat. She may be happy to keep you locked up and out of the way."
"I know," he agreed. "Believe me, I want to get out of here too, but let's give it a little longer. If there's a chance they can find out anything about Kaylee, it will be worth it."
"Okay," Cat sighed reluctantly.
He tapped off his comm, leaned back, and closed his eyes. It may have been minutes or several hours later when the door opened again. He'd lost track of time in his windowless prison. When one of the guards gestured, he stood and turned around, accepting the metal cuffs again. This time they led him in the opposite direction, through a dimly lit tunnel.
He felt her mind touch his, even before the guard shoved him through the door. Suddenly, Kaylee was there in front of him, throwing her arms around him, burying her face in his chest. When she pulled away, she gently cupped his face in her hands. "Oh, Derek," she whispered. He wanted so badly to hold her, but all he could do was touch his forehead to hers. Relief flooded through every atom of his being. "How are you here?" he asked, searching her face, barely believing that she stood before him. "I made some friends," she said.
He couldn't help the short laugh that escaped.
"Of course you did."
She gently ran her hand down his cheek before turning away.
"Ezra, please, let him go."
Derek followed her gaze to the large man standing across the room.
"That's Raina's call. This is her unit," the man said.
Raina moved toward Derek.
"I found what you were looking for. Now I want some real answers."
He hesitated, but knew it was time to risk the truth, or at least part of it.
"I'm Captain Derek Markham. My mission here was to find and recover Dr. Kaylee Chris."
Her eyebrows lifted in surprise.
"You're an Alliance soldier?"
Derek gave a curt nod, his expression guarded. When Raina opened her mouth to speak again, Kaylee stepped protectively in front of Derek and said in a clipped tone,
"How about we talk more when you've uncuffed him and let me treat his injuries?"
Raina gave Kaylee a measured look.
"Fair enough."
As soon as his hands were free, Derek pulled Kaylee against him. He felt her body trembling.
"Take him to the infirmary," Raina ordered the guard, then to Derek. "Get cleaned up. We'll talk more in a few hours." "Let Lieutenant Chase go as well,"
Derek demanded. Raina nodded. He followed the guard out, with Kaylee at his side. She gripped his hand so hard his fingers hurt, but otherwise she held her composure as they wandered.